This show is brought to you by Datsusara. Go to DS Gear and check out their extremely high-quality functional gear that's made with hemp textiles. They have bags, gis, rash guards, and more. They have t-shirts. They have fanny packs. Go to dsgear.com and use code Joey to save 5%. And the show is also brought to you by Onnit.com. Go to Onnit.com and use code Church to save 10% on all of their optimization products like Strongbone, Alpha Brain, New Mood, Shroom Tech Immune, and Shroom Tech Sport. It's code word church at onnit.com to save 10%.
Oh shit. Drop it, Lee. Kick that fucking mule, Lee. Oh. Wednesday, August 10th, cocksuckers. What? Oh shit, Lee Syatt, Susanna Lee, she'll be coming in a little later, and your uncle fucking Joey on a Wednesday night. What else are you gonna be doing? What? What? Kick it, Lee.
That's right, pleased to meet you. I still won't tell you my name. Don't you believe in mystery? Don't you wanna play my game?
Oh shit. Out of that nutsack. It's your fucking lucky night right here, cocksuckers. What? Oh shit, do I think you're a nasty girl? I love it, you filthy animal, you. Give me those dirty feet and those stinky ankles. Oh yeah. What up, you bad motherfuckers? Wednesday nights. DJ Lee, cut the fucking music. Well, you're over there like turning it off like somebody's going to jump off a cliff. You know, ain't nobody jumping off a fucking cliff here. What's going on, my little brother?
I'm having a good day, man. Fuck, that weed is good. It's a good night.
Fuck yeah. It's Wednesday night. Everything's crack-a-lacking. We're back on, you know. I feel a lot better. I was a little under the weather there. I can't smoke pot with a lot of people. I get sick. And right away, like that night when I left here, just hitting that vapor pen with the kid from Eureka.
Yeah, you just knew?
I just knew. When I went home that night, I got up at 4 in the morning. My throat was already scratchy. By the time I got up at fucking 7, I was spitting colors and shit. You know, three days.
When you know you're going to be sick.
Yeah, you know. And here's the problem when you're sick, that you go, you know what? I got this. And you go do something stupid. And you break the sweat. And you leave the t-shirt on. And here you are. For 6 weeks coughing. You know those 2 week coughs and you finally go to the doctor and he gives you a prescription. Yeah. And this is why you have to really watch, especially at my age, especially, you know, and I'm thinking about how I got sick 2 weeks after the surgery because those antibiotics clean out your fucking system. So your immune system is weak. It's building back up. I got back on a plane. I got sick on a plane. You know, this is the shit that happens. Just getting simple. This is just a simple cold, but you can't do much with it. You know for a fact that if you fucking juggernaut this thing, it could either get really bad or it could shake. Why take the chance? I got to go to Denver this week. I got to do 5 fucking shows. Thursday sold out already. Why do I take a chance? I just relaxed. I did not go to jiu-jitsu all week between the fucking arm and the cold and the whole fucking deal. I just said, you know what? Again, just relax. Why kill yourself? I don't want to turn this into an pneumonia. And then I got on the fucking plane. It gets worse. And I got up in high altitude. And then we got a fucking problem all weekend.
And not to mention, like, rolling, it's like the same as smoking with someone. If you roll with someone, they get up and then they're sneezing, they have a cold. I'm like, what the fuck, man? Yeah, you're sweating on me.
So what I do is just then tend to myself. I did a little writing. I made some notes. You know, shit like that. It wasn't the biggest week of my life. I got to move. So I already started throwing some shit out, some t-shirts, shit I don't wear, shit I found that I didn't even know I still had, shoes. Just, I'm doing the first sweep. The next week, I'm doing the most intense sweep when I get home. Then I go to Oddball. And then when I come back, we make the move. You got to give me the movers' numbers. So we get them on fucking point.
Oh, yeah.
The bed's coming from Helix Sleep. They sent us a bed, the whole fucking deal. So it's over.
It can be really stressful moving.
It could be if you let it be. If you put yourself in the predicament of a two-dayer, and then you want to cut corners and borrow a truck from your friend, and then your other buddy's going to come. That's a mind fuck right there. So what I've done the last two times is I start moving boxes over on the 15th. They did the lawn today. Tomorrow's the painting. And I guess next week is the carpeting. And right after that, I start moving over there. 3 boxes a night. When I leave here after the podcast, 3 boxes a night. I'm not doing nothing at 2:30 in the afternoon. Three boxes. And pretty soon when the movers come, it's a fucking, it's 3 hours because we're right around the fucking corner.
Yeah. The only, it's tough.
What are we taking? We're donating the couches. They smell like cat piss. We're taking the TV, the fucking bedroom, the kids' room. That's it. We can't carry the refrigerator down because it might break the fucking stairs. And we can't take the oven. So what are we taking? The pictures, the bathroom shit. That's it. The clothes and the cabinets. That's it. So I could start taking the winter clothes over there already, suits, shirts, you know, and that's how you do it. The books I got in that library, start going over there. Let the movers move the 2 desks, the mattresses, the bedroom, the baby's bedroom. That's it. Boxes, we're going to take dishes over. The dish, like, she's already got all that packed, the shit that's not, we don't use on a daily. Get that shit out of here. Get it out. So that shit's going. She already cleaned the cabinets for groceries, like the shit that's expired that we don't really use. We travel light. Us Puerto Ricans travel light, cocksucker.
Dude, I've moved bottles of alcohol. Like, I pack. I don't throw anything away. I can't throw away. I literally have a box that I bring. I take the stuff from my fridge. I'm like, all right, we're going to move.
No, I take the shit from my fridge.
Okay.
But there's shit that, like tartar sauce.
I'll
you know,
it, yeah.
There's tartar sauce that's half full and the sides are crusted. What are you going to take that for?
Take
get Ebola?
Salt.
Yep. No. What's the red shit? What's
ketchup?
The, no, the other shit.
Cocktail sauce?
Yeah. That shit gets all crusty. Throw it away. It's $1.49 on special. You can make it at your fucking house. I'm going to carry that shit with me that it falls, and you got it on your fingers, and you touch your sweater, now you got that red shit on your finger. There's 1,000 things that don't need to really go. No, I don't like that. It's not worth the fucking aggravation.
Because you're getting a house, so it's cool that you get to move in early. I've always, ever since I moved out.
No, we're going to move boxes early.
Right.
But we don't move till like September 1st is complete.
Oh, yeah. No, I understand. But what I'm saying is like, ever since I moved out, I've lived in apartments. And with that, you only have like a day. So I never, as broke as I was, I never once asked friends to help me move. I've always paid. Because it just, we were talking before the podcast started about how like you start realizing how much stuff costs, like if you're on vacation or something. I was thinking about that the other like last night. I bought something and I was like, that's like half an hour of work or whatever. When you start realizing how much time it takes to actually buy something that you're buying, like you'll either start buying less or you'll realize that your time's important. So rather than spending 4 days moving, just hire movers for $300.
I feel the same way. If you think I want to go up and downstairs in the morning with fucking couches and shit, I can't handle that. Not 3 days of that.
No.
It's not worth my health. It's not nothing. Especially for what we're moving. Like I said to you, we got fucking Salvation Army on point. They're picking up the couches, the chairs. We're taking the 2 TVs, the baby's TV, shit like that. The baby's room is the toughest, believe it or not.
She's the most stuff?
Yeah, but we're taking all her clothes over and boxes over. The moving thing is preparation. It's like painting a room. You come in here, look at a room, look at it, and then just put a fucking roller on it, roll the wall, and then later on have to get turpentine and clean off the windowsills and clean off the fucking electrical cabinets because of that. You see how that gray and that white look?
Yeah.
You see how good it looks? How many times have you gone to somebody's house and there's paint on that white fucking cap?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
On the electrical thing. So what do? You look at the room and you go, okay, let me tape it off first. And that saves me time later with turpentine. God forbid you knock over the turpentine on the carpet. Now you fucking go and the turpentine drips off the rag because you put, now it goes on the new paint. Who needs that shit? That's the fucking old way of doing it. Just go in there. You have to look at things and look at them and look at them again and go, okay, this is the plan for this. Look at what you're working with, what your work dates are, what you have available to you. I mean, there's a lot of fucking alternatives. And, you know, you're moving. You have a first, last, security. You're already tapped out. But there's different ways to do it to save on an angle, you know. I don't know anything about cross-country moving. I've never done that. I heard that's a fucking nightmare. That people come, then they want you to give them $5,000 for the furniture. They hold a ransom. I've heard horror shows about that shit. I know about moving from point A to point B. From point A to point B, long distances, it's just clothing. I've just always taken clothing. That's it. A toothbrush, some socks. some shampoo, and you're ready to go. Some Q-tips. And who's going to stop you? All that other shit, I don't know about. But in short distances, that's when you have to move your fucking furniture.
Have you ever driven like a U-Haul? I think I would destroy. Like the city would come to a halt if I had a U-Haul.
I've driven a U-Haul, but short distances. Not cross country, you know, maybe. I think the most. When we moved from Seattle, we took a fucking camper with a trailer, with a car on the fucking trailer.
You had three vehicles?
Yeah. Like fucking the Sheik of Araby. You know what that's like? You know what that's like? I don't like none of that shit. That shit scares me to fucking pieces.
That must have been. So it was you and Carol.
And a dog.
And a dog. And a camper trailing a trailer with a car off of that. Oh my God.
You have no fucking idea. And then we pull over in San Francisco. I'm standing on the street. She parks the car. We park the car. She goes to turn the U-turn with just the trailer. And all of a sudden, you see the back wheels fall off. And you see the trailer fall on the back. And you see the back wheels just stuck there with the hitch on it and shit. So we had to get a tow truck to tow it into a fucked up neighborhood and park it overnight. We had to sleep in it. People were having an open mic outside our fucking door. This was the craziest week of my life, sleeping on the street in a fucking trailer in San Francisco with a fucking dog and people outside your trailer singing with guitars and shit and shooting heroin. And you're like, what the fuck is this shit?
Oh, my God.
They were talking about shooting heroin to tie him up. You know, did he have any fucking cotton balls? I mean, it was crazy. And I'm laying there in that bed going, what the fuck have I done to deserve this shit? So I know I hate that shit. That's the stuff I can't tolerate. Like, that's what stopped me from moving cross-country with my wife, the cats. If I move cross-country with my wife, then I'd have to move the wife, the fucking cats, the kid. You got to stop every 2 hours with the fucking cats. You have no idea, my friend.
Yeah, that sounds like a disaster.
Yeah, you have no fucking idea what it's like. You break down with cats, those motherfuckers fry in the back seat. So you got to have all your fucking shit intact, you know. It's tough. It's fucking tough. But like I said to you, I'm handling this the right way. I'm looking at it. I'm going to Denver. I come back, and that's when I start making my moves. We're keeping in touch with the fucking property manager every day, back and forth, letting us know what the schedule is. So once we could start, it's three little boxes every day. Next week, I throw every shit out in the house. Next Monday night, by Tuesday morning, I take 3 or 4 bags that I Goodwill up to fucking corn.
Oh, right. Yeah, you just got to get rid of everything.
Everything.
Are you excited for Mercy? Like, it must be. Like, I didn't grow up in an apartment. I was very lucky, and I grew up in a house. And the town I grew up in literally had, I think, maybe one apartment complex. And I never. Now when I see kids, I feel not bad, but I'm like, it must be different growing up in an apartment from a house. Like, Mercy's going to love that.
It's been rough the last 3 years because we didn't really know we were going to have the child when we moved into this place. And then we didn't know whether to move out, rent, own. You know, I like an area because of its convenience. You know, I'm very convenient here. I like this area. You know, I've always liked this area. I lived in this area when I first moved to LA for 3 or 4 months with Carol and Violent and Moore Park.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So I like this area. I know the CVS people. I know the weed stores. I know the sandwich places. I know everybody up here. So I didn't think about moving to West Hills or moving to Vegas. I couldn't even imagine it starting over again. So my wife said, fuck it. We're not going to find the house. Let's just rent one for a year and kill some time. I was like, give it a go. I didn't think we were going to find one this quick. I really didn't. But it was in the cards. I told my wife this is how it was going to happen. It wasn't going to happen. It was going to be a quick process, just like this happened. Come look at it Saturday, fill out the application, and you'll know by Monday. And that's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. I'm very happy. You know, I grew up in New York City in an apartment for a few years. But then we moved to a house in New Jersey. And there was a big difference. there was a big difference as a child, your confidence and whatnot. I mean, most children don't fucking think about that shit.
Well, I don't even mean like most the fact that they're in an apartment. Yeah. I just mean like you have a little a yard. You can be a little loud.
I have a friend that has three kids and they live in a one bedroom apartment.
Jeez.
He's fighting for his life and she's fighting for her fucking life. But who could come over? They sleep in the living room. They just have beds everywhere in the living room.
Yeah.
Nice people. I visit them like twice a year. I know them. I bring the kids gifts. I talk to them and shit all the time on the phone. She used to cut my hair, my wife's hair, but they got three kids in a one-bedroom apartment. So I know how fortunate I am. I know how fortunate I am. You know, it was a blessing in disguise when they asked us to leave down there. They one day just knocked on the door and said, the landlord found out you had cats. You have to go.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's the story. Terry lived in, I lived in there with Terry for 8 fucking years.
Oh, the first place in Hollywood.
The first place in Hollywood. And one day, the day after we got married, they knocked on the door and said, you got to move out. And we were like, are you fucking serious? And they're like, yeah, you have cats. It's not in the lease. Terry's been here 9 years with the fucking cats. What are you talking about? But what they were trying to do is get the, it was rent-controlled apartments.
Right.
They were trying to get everybody out, redo the apartments, and then charge $1,500 a month.
Absolutely.
And at first, I was mad, but then it's everything else that's been in my life. They did me a fucking favor. They did me a fucking favor. You know, and I didn't even know it. I was so stressed when I moved up here. I mean, the rent was going up $800. I thought it was the end of the fucking world. I never thought I would make the rent up here. I never thought I would make the rent up here. I always thought I barely made rent down there. How am I going to make fucking the rent up here? And it worked itself out, Lee, because everything does. You know, I was thinking about the process today. The process that everybody's scared of. You know, there's a process in life. And we try to rush it at times, but you can't rush it. It's a fucking process. And I know it from a comedian standpoint, because when I first got here, myself, Josh Wolf, Brody, you know, we were very eager. You're very eager. You're very eager. You're very eager. And then you start losing it. And then a situation happens that puts you back into perspective. And then you know how to handle this place. There's 3 stages to this town, this city up here. And that's what usually happens. You're very eager. You're very eager. You're very eager. You start doing things, you start making little moves, and then you book something, but you see a little bit behind the curtain, and it wasn't what you thought it was going to be, and the people turned, and everything changed, and you're bummed for a while, but when you recover from that, you're a different person in this town. It's tough when I see, like, Tony Hinchcliffe is on fire right now, and he's frustrated, he's eager. But he doesn't know that it's a process, and I can't explain it to him. See what I'm saying? It's very rough, because if somebody would have came to me in 2003 and told me it was a process, I would have told them to go fuck themselves. There ain't no process here. I'm cracking jokes, people are laughing. What's the fucking problem? It doesn't work that way. It works in layers, but we're always scared of the fucking process. Tomorrow you walk into the union hall, and you go, I want to be a fucking union plumber. And they say, okay, it takes 4 years of being an apprentice, 2 years residential, 2 years commercial, and then you join the master's program. I don't know the dynamics. I'm just making up numbers here. Like I've always said, we look at that number and we look at it as so distant. But then once you do it, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, I completely understand. But this is something that I've been struggling with lately. So you said there's a process, right? What I'm most worried about now is making the wrong move. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm worried about, like, I have a couple different options, and like let's say someone gets 2 job offers. Whenever that happened to me, I'd always be like, fuck, which one do I take? Like, in my mind, if I take the wrong one, my life is going to end. And I know probably that's not going to happen, but that's a big fear of mine, is which decision to make.
I think the biggest mistake we make is going to people who don't know your situation. Uh-huh. And you break your situation down to them, your job, what the benefits are, what the cons are. You know, there's all that shit, right? And right. Then, but at the end, and I've said this for years, I thought about this maybe when we still lived down there, how you always know the best decisions for you. It's just scared coming up with the decision. You know, you're in a room, you lost your job, your wife's not talking to you, she moved back in with her mother. This is all because of drugs and your gambling. The last thing in your mind at that point is going to a rehab and ending this party. You know, it's the most distant thing from your fucking mind.
You're trying to figure out how to fix it?
But while you're trying to sit there and fix everything, you know this is going to be the first answer. This is going to calm everybody down by you going to a rehab. Even if you don't want to go, the people around you feel at ease. You may have a good chance of getting your wife back. I never thought of going to a rehab. That's why I never went to a fucking rehab. Like, I never thought of going to a fucking rehab. I can't imagine ending this fucking party, this charade.
So, you just mean you didn't consider it. You probably had the idea.
I had ideas about it. We all do. When we're in that position, we all know that this is, we need help. This is uncontrollable. I told myself I wasn't going to get high till Friday. It's fucking Tuesday. I'm bleeding from my nose. There's a dead chick in my bed. I'm not going to work again. You know, just little things. And you say to yourself, what ends this? And you're like a fucking rehab. But, you know, that's the answer. But you're like, nah, there's got to be something else I can do.
Oh, absolutely. But here's the frustrating part for me. So, like, that's a negative thing happening. What happens when things are going great and you have to make a decision? I'm worried that when things are going good.
You know why things are going great?
Why?
Because you made the right decisions. So just believe in yourself and go with your fucking stomach. Things are going great because you made the right decisions. Because you made certain decisions at certain times. You know, I'm not here. I'm not going to Denver this week to headline because I'm a funny comedian. I'm not even going to headline. I'm not even going to Denver because of all the work I put into this. Comically, I mean, like writing and getting on stage at night and waiting in line. That's all great and dandy. How you get forward is those little sacrifices when you stick to them. Sacrifices are the fucking thing. I never realized it till I started thinking about this Jody situation and what she was mad about years ago when a group of people were also angry at me that I don't do enough social activities.
And they're mad at you for that?
A lot of people get mad at me because I don't do a lot of things socially because they don't get it that when you're doing something socially that, you know, they always want to do things on nights where it's comedy nights. Like Monday nights. Monday nights was the hottest night in L.A. 10 years ago. You know, to have the honor to get on stage at the Laugh Factory or the Improv or the Store on a Monday night was fucking great, Lee, you know? They always had parties on Monday nights or Thursday nights or Friday nights or Saturday nights. Those are the nights you're doing comedy. You know, like my birthday is June, whatever. You're in Ohio that weekend. They would look at you like, why don't you cancel and move the date? This is going to be a great party. And you're like, are you fucking kidding me? It's the little things I stuck to. It wasn't the time I put in or because I'm funnier than Lee Syatt. It was the little things I stuck to. Like, these are the things I'm not doing. You know, and these are the things I'm doing. Granted, it took me a long time to stop doing fucking blow. But once I stopped, I stopped. And I used those other principles that I've used in other things where you sacrifice things. You go, this is not what I'm doing. This is what I'm going to do. Even if I want to do this really bad, this is what needs to be done.
Right, absolutely.
And it's always panned out for me. I've been thinking a lot about that lately, how that always worked out for me, and people never understood that part of me.
Well,
like when I tell you I'm going to do something from 2 to 5, that's what I'm doing. I don't give a fuck what you got going on. I already got something going on. I'm happy that you got something going on. I'm going to do my thing, you do your thing, and I'll call you at 10 after 5. But people don't seem to understand that. Shane came to the show the other night. Mm-hmm. Remember Shane? Tuesday night he came. Last night?
Yeah.
He came. We were talking the other day, and I go, you working? And he goes, I'm working. Usually I wouldn't answer the phone, and I started talking to him. Like, people like him, Mitch Hedberg, all those guys had schedules where they wouldn't respond to people. They would just lock themselves in the room and focus on writing. You know, that's very hard to do with the fucking internet. That's why I like to go to a coffee shop when I write. Because I hate the internet around. When I go write, I shut the phone off and I put it in a bag. And I don't give a fuck who calls. I'll look at it every fucking 30 minutes or something like that in my mind, but I won't look at Twitter or Facebook. It's just for calls, you know?
Right, absolutely.
I took the Facebook off the phone. You know, I've taken all that shit off the phone anyway. You see the article today about Ari Shafir?
Yeah, I read it, yeah.
You know, it makes a lot of sense.
I think it totally makes sense.
It makes sense.
I didn't understand, for people who didn't read it, it was about Ari giving up his cell phone, and they interviewed this, like...
Smartphone.
His smartphone, you're right. And they interviewed this, like, professor who was like, I don't think it's right. I don't think that people do have an addiction to the smartphone. I get a little bit nervous if I feel like I lost my phone or don't have it with me. I would get a lot more done if I didn't have one. Absolutely. 100%.
I've really been thinking about it.
Yeah.
This thing is broken, you know. It's still stuck on two fucking messages. I use the calculator once in a while. I use the notes once in a while. I like the voice recorder now. You taught me how to use it, even though I erased the show by mistake. I don't know what I'm fucking doing. I don't like Twitter on it. I took the fucking Facebook off of it. I got the emergency email on it, just in case I have an audition or something like that. But besides that, there's nothing on me to really distract me. I don't play games. I don't do Pokemon. I don't read fucking comic books. You know, I have music on here, but it doesn't sound as good as the iPod. And I don't want to not have power when I'm on the phone, when I'm on the fucking plane. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely,
So if you get on a four-hour flight, you get off, your power is fucking dead on these things. Now you got to stand there like a mortadel and charge your fucking phone. As soon as I get on the plane, I shut the fucking phone off, and I put the iPod on.
Yeah.
You know, and I do that, so I always have my phone in full charge. What if the plane goes down and you're on a fucking island in Baruba? And nobody can call because I mean, they've been playing fucking Pokemon. Here, my shit's going to be fooled up, Jack.
No, it's important. It's important. And it's like it's I find myself going back through Facebook that I've already seen. Like it's crazy what a time suck it is.
Well, boredom. Boredom is a fucking thing. And you run home, you open it up. You see if somebody messaged you on Facebook. You see if somebody messaged you on Twitter. You see if somebody got on Hotmail, I shut the thing off and leave. I do that 10 times a fucking day. Just to see if somebody had needed something or something. That's what I do. But besides that, I'm not on there. When I go on the weekends, on the road, that computer I have doesn't let me really do much. It's such a fucking nightmare, that Surface. It's such a fucking nightmare. And that's what everybody wants to email me and everybody wants to talk on the fucking computer. And you know, I find shit on that computer when I go on the road that I don't see on the house computer.
Really?
Yeah, it's fucking crazy.
That's weird. And going back to not answering the phone, I have a problem now because people know that I'm not at an office during the day. I get fucking 1,000 calls that have nothing to do about business. And I feel like if it's a family member or something, I feel like I have to take it. And I look back and it's an hour out of my day. Like between 2 or 3 phone calls. Like, do you not answer phone calls?
If you taught me how to do that phone shut off. So there's days I put that on, I forget to turn it back on. So the fucking phone don't ring, and all of a sudden 35 people fucking call me. But again, I'm like you. I look at it and I go, I was with my daughter. I couldn't answer the phone anyway, so I'm happy I had this thing off.
Yeah, do not disturb, yeah.
Yeah, the do not disturb thing. You know, that's it. There's times I forget to turn it on at night, and it runs the next fucking day. And then I go, fuck, nobody's called. And I go, holy shit, because I don't even look at it. When I get up in the morning, I don't even look at the phone anymore. I don't turn the TV on, I don't look at the phone no more. Nobody calls me after 12 no more. I don't do drugs. Every once in a while, Ralphie calls me early, and I'll call him back, or I'll call him when I get in the car or something. But besides that, nobody calls me overnight no more.
I think that's the move, because I'm this way, and I think a lot of people in their 20s are this way. In my bed, if Paula's not there, my cell phone and my laptop are next to me, like in the other person's spot. It's like that can't be good.
Well, you see how much time you're wasting. You see, and listen, man, I freak out when I go for my phone. I'm a Cuban Jew. I'm thinking 400.
Yeah, me too.
I'm thinking 400 and all my numbers. I got to start from fucking scratch now. That's what you start thinking about. 400. And all the numbers you lost. That's all I give a fuck about. I got to start from scratch now. I got 1,000 fucking numbers on there that I've developed over the years. That's what I worry about. You go to your hotel and call. How many times? That's why before I get out of the cab, I look everywhere. When I get in a person's car, I look everywhere. Sometimes I take my phone out and put it in the door.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and I get out of the car. You have no fucking idea what I've gone through sometimes. So now I hold on to this thing. I could have taken this thing in a fucking year ago. I just keep them. I don't even know what it is. A 5, a 3, a 2, a fucking 6. I don't know, and I don't give a fuck. It's got 16 cracks in the fucking screen. I'm going to have to take it in eventually.
I don't remember if it was in the Ari Shaffir article or something else that I read today. It was probably the Ari article. But it said something like there's more smartphones in Great Britain than there are people. And I was thinking about that. And I was like, how can that be? And what it is what I think it is they somehow tricked us into buying a new phone every 2 years. They're like, okay, you have a 2-year plan. So every 2 years you buy a phone. And there's really no reason to. But like, I must have 4 phones at my house just doing nothing.
Why don't you donate them to the army?
The army needs old cell phones?
Yeah, they refix them. Somebody was telling me that. You can donate them to service.
Okay, I had no idea.
Yeah, you can go online and they give you an address. You can mail it to them and some soldier in Iraq could have a fucking phone. You ever think of that?
No, I hadn't.
See?
It's amazing the amount of money we spend on that stuff, though.
Oh, no. And listen, these things break. They're programmed to break. They're programmed to break every 18 fucking months. There's a thing. You go in there and you take the chip out. Is that true? Have you heard about that?
No, I haven't heard about it.
There's some on the computer, I think. There's a chip.
Oh, it's like a self-destruct chip?
Yeah.
I don't doubt it.
You go in there and you take it out, and now the computer lasts long. I don't know if this is true. I heard this from somebody.
I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt anything that these people are doing.
Like, because I don't want to buy a fucking phone. I don't want to put that much stock into a phone. Like, I was raised to stay the fuck away from the phone. I didn't start talking to people on the phone until I talked to girls when you're 13.
Right, yeah.
And you talk to them for hours. I don't give a fuck about that. But to sit there all fucking, I can't do it no more. I have to write. I have to pick up the baby. You know, 9 out of 10 times I'm in front of people. I can't pick up a phone.
That doesn't stop a lot of people now, though.
Yeah, because they're fucking rude. But if I'm in a meeting with Shane or one of those dudes, I can't pick up a fucking phone. Unless my wife calls me twice, I don't pick up the fucking phone. That means it's an emergency. That's it.
But then, I was thinking about it. I feel bad for people who, when I had a job, I'd be answering emails, calls, and stuff 24 hours a day, 7 days. Like, you must get work emails. And it's different because you don't really have a set schedule. But at a certain point, that should stop. Like, you're supposed to have some downtime.
Well, let's say I'm out and about and I get work emails. A lot of work emails entail dates. I can't give them an answer until I get back home if I'm on the road.
Right.
I don't bring my book with me on the road. I don't know where I'm going to be that fucking date. I have an idea, roughly. I have an idea, but I never want to put myself in a bad position because I have.
No. Oh, yeah.
I get home and all of a sudden I'm like, fuck, I got that thing at fucking 6 o'clock. Now I got to call this guy back and tell him no. So now I have a rule. I've had a rule for a few years. Before I give you a fucking date, I got to go home and check it out.
Well, I mean, that's a good rule. But I mean, even like at dinner with Mercy, you must get a call about work or an email. And at a certain point, you have to throw it away.
If it's not a Jew from Beverly Hills, that phone ain't getting fucking picked up if I'm with Mercy. Plain and fucking simple. Plain and fucking simple. If I'm with Mercy, I'm at a table with my wife, and it's a Jew from Beverly Hills, the phone gets picked up. But if it's not a Jew from Beverly Hills, you're in no danger of fucking getting picked up, dog.
I just imagine you having a group on your phone, just the Jews from Beverly Hills.
That's it. If you're not a Jew from Beverly Hills, I don't even think about it. I'm with my fucking daughter and with my family. What the fuck, you know? What the fuck?
And some people don't understand that. Like, if you don't respond to a text right away, or you don't respond to text at all, but just the phone calls, it's too much.
It's too much. It's all fucking day. And then you go home and you get emails on all three. You know, I got 4, 6, 8 different ways of getting email. I haven't even approved people, and I got emails on LinkedIn. You understand me? I haven't even fucking signed up for LinkedIn, and I don't even know how I got on there, and I got fucking emails on LinkedIn, okay?
You have a huge, very popular account.
Yeah, like, I don't want to hang out with business associates, and the same morons are on my Facebook fucking page. The same fucking morons on my Facebook page are the same fucking people on LinkedIn, whatever the fuck it is. So, I don't know what the fuck, where to go. I got 1,000 comics calling me up. Did you know that lately?
For what?
Just 1,000 fucking things. I get numbers on my phone. I don't even know. And since I don't have glasses, I can't see them. So if the name's not in there, you're in no fucking danger. I can't see the fucking number. I get 714s, Oshaga, New York. This morning at 8 o'clock, I started getting calls from somebody. I didn't even know. I was outside. I didn't even fucking know until I came up that I got 3 calls from the same fucking number. No message. You're not getting a call back. You're in no danger. You call till your fingers turn fucking pink.
But people know they're not supposed to leave a message with you.
No, there's no thing no more. It says not to leave. It says not to leave nothing. It's very ambiguous. There's nothing there that's even me. Nothing. I took all that shit off. Done.
No voicemail.
No voicemail. If you called me from 10 years ago on that number, you don't know who's got it now. I get people. I wake up sometimes and there's fucking people. Joey, remember me from fucking Click? I don't remember nobody. I don't remember nobody. 915. That's El Paso. That's cocaine. I don't remember nobody. Okay, I got no memories. I don't know who the fuck is calling me. I don't know who the hell it is. Hello. All right, I'll be right out, my love. Go get the Savage Lee of Death. We got my girl Susanna coming in. She's a friend of mine that Felicia introduced me to. Felicia did a documentary that's getting some heat. And it's about... You want to go get it? And it's about... What are you looking at me for? It's almighty. Unfucking believable. And it's about... I'll let her tell you. You know, it's... They're like... I don't know what the fuck they even call them. I don't know if they're sex workers. I don't know what the fuck they call them. But I did one of the scenes for Felicia, and I found her to be really interesting. And I just thought about it for a long time, like how many fucking peep shows I had gone to over the years. You know, I didn't even want to say it. Like, how I met her was the Felicia documentary of her dancing in a peep show. So she was kind of naked, so... Obviously, I'm fucking purple the whole time. She's asking me fucking creepy questions and shit. But after I left and I went home, I wanted to know why in my mind I got all creeped up when I went and did that. I mean, she's just a woman. She's just a beautiful fucking woman. You know, she's a young girl. Whatever the fuck she is, I don't even know how old she is. But why'd I get creeped out? So I thought about it. I said, instead of me hitting her up, or me going down there and taking her clothes off or something, why don't I get her on the fucking podcast and let's talk about what the fuck she does, how she got into it, why she does it, blah, 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 blah. That's it. You know us, dog. We keep it fucking simple. It's bong hits for Jerry's kids on a fucking Wednesday night in the church. So, yeah, it just seemed an interesting topic for me. You know, as a kid in New York City, what's happening, my love? Let Lee go in first, and then you sit in the middle here. Go ahead, Lee. You're a flying fucking savage, brother. Get in here, my little princess of beauty. What's happening?
Not much. Right as I was leaving, one of my customers was coming in.
Oh, Jesus. I'm fucking sorry about that. I like the skirt.
Thank you.
It's you. You know what I'm saying? The skirt is you. I like the tats tonight. They're you. Everything's fucking you.
Everything is.
What's going on, Lisa? You had everything good? Did you introduce yourself?
I did, yes. The edible kicked in as soon as I stood up for a second.
Good. They're supposed to kick in when you fucking stand up. What would you like for me to call you on this?
Either way, Susanna.
That's what I had you down for. Yeah. Susanna Lee. What's going on, beautiful?
Not much. I'm in the middle of a 15-hour shift, so.
You know, man, people are killing themselves to live. That's a lot of fucking work. But you're gonna do it. You travel, you go on the road, you do stand-up, you fucking sing, you dance, you do burlesque.
No singing.
You're a woman of 1,000 fucking things. But I was telling them that I met you when I did the documentary for Felicia with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really weird because I've been thinking about you ever since that. Because that night, like, I didn't know what to think when you took your clothes off and stuff. But I kind of froze up, you know. When I went home, I was like, why did I freeze up like that? And I just wanted to get you on the show and talk about what you do. I really found you interesting and beautiful. So let's bullshit, my love. What's happening? So this shift tonight, where are you working at today?
Today I'm working at my main place, actually my only place right now. It's called Eros Station.
Okay.
And it's on Oxnard and Sepulveda. It's a private show place. Laundry, modeling, private dancer, that type of thing.
Not like the other place I went to.
No, there's no glass between me and the customer. This is just me alone with a stranger in a small room for 20, 30 minutes at a time.
Oh, my fucking God. And you have regulars, you said.
I do, yeah.
Now, how long have you been in this industry?
Well, when I lived in Chicago in the mid-90s, I did phone sex towards the end of the 90s. And then I quit that. I worked for an independent service, so she didn't have really any... She didn't have any major restrictions on what people could talk about. And she was a dog lover, so she no bestiality. No bestiality. And I found that out after I got a dog call, and I called her, and I was like, could you please not give me any more animal calls? And she's like, oh, we don't do that. But here's your next customer. He's a Chester. That's what she used to call the pedophiles. So I worked for her until I got a really, really bad pedophile, like a really terrible call.
On the phone.
Yeah. And then I was just like, I can't listen to this anymore. And then I didn't do anything for several years, for like 5 years. And in that time, I'd been married. I moved from Chicago back to Kansas City, got married, moved out to Oregon, moved back to Kansas City, left my husband. And then I started doing stuff again. But I got into it really, I didn't go straight into sex work. You know, all I had done was phone sex. I hadn't done any in-person stuff. And I met this guy on Craigslist, and, you know, he came over, like, I met him looking for a guy to are there language restrictions?
On No.
Oh, great. So I was looking for a guy to fuck, because since I'd left my husband, I'd sort of, like, worn out all the familiar dick that I knew, so I was looking for a new guy. And I went on Craigslist, and I was talking to this guy, his name was James, and he shows up in my apartment, and when he shows up, I see the pictures he sent were just completely inaccurate, and I'm like, I can't fuck you. But we both liked the same drugs, and he had some, so we totally hung out, you know, friendly-like, and we did for weeks. And then I guess he got tired of hearing me bitch about being broke. Cause, you know, the divorce, like, it just...
Yeah, kills you.
Yeah.
Kills you.
And my husband had, like, pilfered money before we split up. And I didn't know that until after we split up and I checked the bank. You know what I mean? So he was like, do you want to work for me? And I'm like, well, what do you do? I assumed it was drugs, but I'm picky about the type of drugs I'll sell. Like, I don't want to sell meth or any. I want to be part of the solution, you know, not the problem.
Right.
So he said he was a racker. And I was like, I don't know what that... Are you a stock boy? And he told me, do you know what racking is?
No.
Oh, it's blatant theft from big box stores. You walk in, you fill out a car, and you just walk the fuck out. So that's what we did. And he just needed someone to distract the person in the department that he needed, because he and the people that were in his crew, they all specialized in different things. And so James didn't steal, like, cool shit, you know. It was not like TVs. James stole scrapbooking supplies from Hobby Lobby and then resold it on eBay.
It's a fucking living, man.
Right?
It's a fucking...
Oh, no, he had a lot of money, and he had a great house. Absolutely. And so I helped him out with that for a while, and one day we made a run from Kansas City to St. Louis and back and hit, like, all the Hobby Lobbies, all the Michaels, all the Joanne Fabrics and Crafts, you know? And we get back, and he dropped me off, and he had to go do a pill deal because, he did also sell drugs. And then a couple hours later, he called me, and he was bragging about the pill deal. He's like, oh, I just did this big Oxy deal, and I have all this money. He's like, would you fuck me for $2,500? And I'm like, absolutely. Yes, absolutely, I would. And he was like, but, like, first of all, how could you think I would say no? $2,500 that's good money, you know, for very little effort. I was going to fuck him for free, you know, if he was accurate to his pictures, which he wasn't. But so he was like, well, I don't have it all in cash. Would you fuck me for $500? And I was like, yeah, I would. My rent was like $455 at the time. Of course I'm going to fuck you for $500. But then I was like, you know, then I had to ask about the details. I was like, well, no anal. And he's like, that's fine. You make the rules. And I was like, okay, I'm not sucking anything. And he's like, that's okay. You make the rules. I'm like, really? Is that okay? Okay. I go, whoa, how many times do I have to do it? And he was like, you tell me. And so I was like, okay, I'll do it one time. And he's like, no, 500, I want more. So I ended up doing it two times, and then he ended up fucking me out of money over the stealing stuff. He paid me for the fucking. He didn't pay me fully for the stealing. And what he paid me for the fucking, the $500 he paid me for the fucking, was the exact amount of money he fucked me out of on the stealing.
On the stealing. Right.
Yeah. And then he blew town and went back to Florida. You know, I don't know where else he would be from, but so I realized, though, like, it really made me think about that, think about sex for money and sex work and, you know, what was standing in the way of me doing that. Because I'd fucked, like, a ton of dudes for free, you know, and even bought, like, many guys enough drinks to, like, get them drunk enough, you know, and that's a terrible thing to do to someone, but that's fine. And so I thought about that, and I thought about, like, the morals and the ethics, and I was never taught that sex was something, like, special. You know, I was never taught that it was, like, something that you have to, you really have to love the person, and this is what two people who are in love do, and, you know, there's doves flying around, and flowers are blooming. I was never taught that. And so, after fucking so many guys that didn't give a shit about me for free, it just sort of dawned on me, like, what am I doing? You know, I can get laid and paid, you know? I can have the dream. So I started doing stuff on Craigslist when I was in Kansas City. I was still living there, and I started doing sex work on Craigslist, and I would look for any ad that mentioned roses, because that's dollars. And I would answer, like, at first, when I first realized I was one of those people that could, compartmentalize and, you know, separate, like, business fucking from pleasure sex, you know, I just was answering every ad. I mean, ads I had no business answering, shit I had no idea how to do. I figured, like, I was like, well, it's sex, like, I'll figure it out. And I didn't always figure it out. One time I broke a paddle on a guy's ass, and he asked me to leave his house, and then deducted the price of the paddle from what he paid me. But then I stopped. I don't remember why I stopped. I think maybe... No.
So wait, guys will put out, like, what they want and what they're willing to pay for it on Craigslist?
Yeah. Well, they won't say dollars, though. They'll say roses. So you look under casual encounters, and, you know, you'll see, like, oh, come watch me jerk off in a parking lot. I have 75 roses for you. One time I took a guy's virginity. Well, I thought I took a guy's virginity. Afterwards, you know, my friend, I thought I took a guy's virginity, and I did it really cheap because he was like, oh, I'm 23 and I'm just out of college and I can't afford to pay you much. And I was trying to be a really good person with it. I was trying to be sort of like, you know, I was trying to help people with my pussy. So I was like, well, you know what? That's fine. I'll do it. And he's like, I can take you out to dinner on my dad's credit card. And it was so cute. And, so after I did this, I called my friend Justin, and I was bragging about what a good person I was. I was just like, I'm such a good person. This boy, I took his virginity. He was so sweet. I was nice to him. And Justin's like, you're stupid. And I'm like, no, I'm a good person. And he's like, how do you know he's a virgin? And I was like, well, because he said so. And then it just all sort of hit me. And then I stopped trying to, you know, be Mother Teresa about it and just stopped trying to force the goodness.
You've met some characters.
Oh, yeah.
You've seen the fucking dark side.
I've definitely seen the dark side.
You know, you dealt with people that are addicted to sex in a sort of way.
I was
addicted to coke. I was addicted to drugs. So when you're telling me I'm substituting these.
It's all the same thing with day jobs. It's all the fucking same. If it's not what I want to do, you know, comedy, if I'm not paying my bills through comedy, through storytelling, through being on stage, then I don't give a fuck what I'm doing. You know, I don't care. I'm given a hand job, big deal. It's like less degrading to me than bringing some bitch like extra lemons for her water, you know? It's all the same thing. Same addiction, same job, it's all the same
thing. I remember when I moved to Snowmass, I was 19 years old. I lived in Aspen, Colorado. And I used to work security at a hotel. And every fucking time somebody checked in, there could be a couple. And he would look at me weird. Like, mm-hmm. like, and then he would come back to the hallway and he'd go, hey, you know anybody? And I didn't know what he was talking. I really did not know the fuck they were talking about. And then after a while, people says, hey, there's escorts.com and these guys are married. They got an extra fucking room. I was like, what the fuck? So you leave your wife in room 212 and go to 318 and fuck somebody else and then just walk out. But then I equaled it to drugs. Like, I would bust into somebody's door and take their fucking drugs in broad daylight without even thinking about it.
Yeah.
But the whole sexual thing has always been, I'm not good at it. I'm clunky.
Not good at sex?
No, I'm clunky. It just never worked out for me ever since I was a kid.
A lot of people are.
Yeah, I'm fucking bad. So it's like something that I've never lost my mind over. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I knew my mom raised me, and I knew that when she said something when I was a kid that I couldn't think about what she was saying. She goes, "You can't fuck everybody." And I always, older, I said, you know what, these girls you meet, you ask them out, they say no, most guys don't talk to them anymore. These guys are allies.
Mm-hmm.
So you become their friends, you know, and you have, it's so weird how I always looked at it. It was never a losing situation for me if I asked. But when I lived in Aspen, I remember walking around thinking to myself, I'm 19 years old. What am I doing if I was a woman right now? No college education. Let's say I was a woman and I was banging. What the fuck would I be doing in Aspen?
Mm-hmm.
Working at a t-shirt store? Giggling? You can get these guys for $1,000 a night. They're flying in. It's in their budget. They got the cash. 3-4 nights a week. 4 weeks, you know, 3 weeks a month. You got 12 grand.
Yeah.
That's 140 grand a fucking year or something like that. After 5 years.
All unclaimed.
All unclaimed. After 5 years, you could buy a house, go to Beverly Hills, redo your pussy, and nobody mm-hmm. knows a fucking thing.
Yeah.
Nobody knows nothing. Gone. You relocate to Massachusetts, and you live like Henry Hill the rest of your life. And you got a house, you got a little bit of peace of mind as a woman. Right.
No one knows your past.
No one knows your past. You know, I always thought about it. I'm like, how do girls not do this? But then as you grow old, you know, you meet different women, you go, I get it, I don't get it, I get it. It's never been a big line with me. Like, I really don't give a fuck. And to mm-hmm. me, it's like, you want to get naked, get naked. You know, I've always been one of those dudes. But when I was growing up in Jersey, we would go to the city to peep shows.
Yeah.
All right. And that always seemed the fucking lowest end of yes. death for me. Like, what I saw was crazy. Like, I used to go to ones on 42nd Street, and they'd have the rotating table,
mm-hmm.
and there'd be some chick with a cesarean scar, fucking doped up, and some junkie just fucking her, and you'd see the Hasidic Jews in the windows at 8 in the morning, like, all fucking whacking off and shit, and you'd say, this is a complete different fucking world.
Yeah.
Like, this is crazy. And as soon as you open the door and you step out, a guy comes in with a bucket with water, hot water, and just mops yep. and goes out, and you step right the fuck in. Least I had, it was surreal. Surreal. How many guys? How big that business is. And then they have the ones that the window opens.
Mm-hmm.
And you can suck their tits and shit like that. And my friend Paris Pizzione, in the 8th grade, mm-hmm. got his neck stuck. He didn't hear the ringer. He didn't hear the fucking ringer and he got his head stuck in there in the 8th grade.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Have you ever done any porn or just like the dancing?
I not really. I did this one thing. It was a Craigslist thing back in Kansas City. They were looking for women to read dirty stories topless. And it was like $250, and that was more than I'd gotten off Craigslist for a little while. And so I was like, no big deal, I'll do that. And I had some of the chest tattoos, so I bought makeup to try and cover them up so I'd be anonymous. And I didn't know anything about makeup or hair at the time. And I took my gay best friend with me as my security, and he brought this guy that he had just started dating. It was like their second date. And it was this hotel room. It was like a middle-aged couple, you know? Could have been anyone. They weren't, like, flashy. They weren't porny. They were just like, middle-aged Midwestern couple. And they just set it up and filmed me reading a story about... My name was Janessa from Denver. And it was a story about how I was a glory hole girl. And, they sent me a link to it after it was done, and I watched it once, and it was absolutely horrible. Just terrible, horrible. But I figured no one's probably going to look at that, and if they do, they get what they, you know.
Yeah, no, there's no, I have no judgment about it, but it's just that that's the one thing that I feel is like, won't go away as much. Maybe like, and if you were a stripper,
I think the emotional scars won't go away. You know, if you have like
Yeah.
You get well, into I a bad
just
run
like,
with it.
I just meant like with if you were going to strip in like Wyoming
sure.
and try to hide out later in life, that's oh, possible. Yeah. With videos, it's kind of on the internet forever.
I don't know. I mean, I think that there's just so much porn out there. There's so many videos that I mean, I know that that's a concern for a lot of people, but I've never really cared about that. You know, I'll let feet guys, if I get foot customers, I'll let them take a picture of my feet after they're done with them. I mean, and I know feet aren't really a I have tattoos on my toes, so they're kind of a little more personalized, but I just never really cared about it, you know? I just never figured that anything in like such a huge sea of material, like one person, like who's going to stumble on your video? I know it's happened, but
I just talked to a girl about a month and a half ago. She used to hang out at the Haha Cafe. Mm-hmm. You know what, man? That whole time I knew I had no idea what she did
mm-hmm.
until she hit me up on Twitter one day. I was in Long Island. And she goes, I live here now. Can you leave me tickets? And then afterward, I didn't see her. So I didn't think she really showed up. And then she hit me a few days later. She thanked me. She said her aunt got drunk and they had to leave. So something happened. She called me. She sent me her number for something. And then we just tweeted back and forth. And I finally was on the road one day. Well, let me call her now. And I called her in the daytime. And that's when she told me her whole story.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, you didn't know what I was doing. I was a camera girl.
Like the, a webcam girl?
Where you put the money in the camera, I guess, yeah. And she goes, but before that, I did porn. And oh. she goes, but the cam stuff was, she was all cracked up and stuff. Because mm-hmm. when I met her, she was really skinny, so I couldn't tell what was going on. I knew something was not legit.
It wasn't a healthy skinny.
With me. Yeah, it was yeah. hello, goodbye. That was a funny joke. Is that your dog? Shit like that. That was very light, so... She was telling me that she went back to New York, gained the weight, went to a rehab, got a job in a restaurant as a waitress, and after 6 weeks, one of the guys in the restaurant said something to her.
Oh.
And she goes, it's been a hell of a since for me at the restaurant. I go, well, you should just quit and get a job. She goes, it's not that easy.
Yeah.
She went, pays a car payment and a rent, and this restaurant pays well. It's a good clientele, so... But I think with the internet, it's just a matter of fucking time.
Oh.
You know? There's fucking crazy people out there. And that's one thing True. That Lee doesn't know, but you know, and I know. I mean, just now when you said foot guys that just come in and just want to whack off on your feet. You know, yeah. they just want to do crazy shit.
Yeah.
You sit there. From my world, I think it's crazy. From their world, they think it's crazy. I wake up at 7 and smoke dope. Mm-hmm. You follow me? So, yeah, it's this. There's other. Like, who the fuck gets up at 7 and smokes pot in the morning? But I go somewhere and jerk off on some poor lady's feet or something like that. What do you charge a guy to whack off on your feet?
Well, I mean, technically, I don't do that.
Right.
Of course, because I work legally.
They give you roses.
All the, yeah. It would probably be, it would, you know, generally, if it's 200 roses or more, I'm negotiable for almost anything. Feet guys, I have a soft spot for because the stripper shoes hurt and I do like a foot rub. So I will, you know.
Oh, they'll give you a foot rub.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking oh, yeah. tremendous.
Feet guys will give you a foot rub. They'll suck on your toes. They don't care how dirty they are. The dirtier, the better, usually. And so, you know, it's no big deal. You want to jerk off on my feet? You want me to give you a foot job? Like, I don't mind that. You're nice enough to rub my feet, even though that's what you're into. So. You know, really, you're just getting more than you paid for, but that's okay.
I had a friend of mine, Roger, one time. I said, you still get blowjobs from those chicks? He goes, nah, not anymore. I changed my act. They jerk me off with their feet. I thought that was a joke. Obviously, no. It's true.
I first discovered that when I was married. I would have my husband fuck my feet. He wasn't a foot guy. I wasn't a foot girl, but I wanted to feel like I was still being affectionate towards him, but I had already started hating him. So I figured that was like the way to do it while still like keeping some distance between us.
Fuck my feet.
But yeah, it was nice. Like it feels like a nice, like having a dick in the arch, you know, it feels like it's a foot rub. It's very nice.
You just talked to Nike about that. Like a fucking sneaker with a dick in the arch. Chinese people be jumping up and down and shit all day. Now, I mean, you're the real fucking deal. I didn't know this other side. I just thought you danced in the glass, protected, nobody messed with your world. You know what I'm saying? Are you scared at times? I mean, I look at you and I can tell that you're tough and You've been in some situations?
I've had, in the 4 years that I've worked at the private show place, I've had, at Aero Station, I've had three customers the entire time that I was uncomfortable with. And one of them, I kept the heel of my shoe right here in the in his neck to keep him on the couch because he kept trying to get up. And I kept saying, get the fuck down, sit the fuck down. And he just kept trying to get up. So I was like, I just put my foot there and I just let the timer run out. And then there were two guys that were just creepy. They just had just a, I just, you know, really, really bad feeling. And not like they're going to jump on me and rape me, but more like they would kill me. Like they would kill me in weird, just that sort of really weird energy. But I don't have a lot of fear of it. In 2014, this is kind of, this is going to sound kind of ignorant, but I don't really care. In 2014, a guy broke into my apartment and assaulted me. I didn't know him. He wasn't a customer. It was nothing like that. It was just fucking, maybe not random. It was random that it was me. It was not random that it was that apartment. That apartment had problems before. That doesn't matter. Anyway, I didn't fight back. I just yelled at him until he left. I was in shock. He woke me up with it. It was not, I didn't have time to really think about my reaction. And, so I didn't get to fight back. I didn't get to, like, you know, I didn't get to fight. And I stayed away from work for like a week. And when I went back, I didn't know if I could do it. I went back and I was like, I don't know how I'm going to feel about these situations and being in the room, if I'm going to be like too nervous, if it's going to like traumatize me or re-traumatize or whatever. But it, I actually felt stronger and I felt less nervous about saying no and setting boundaries. And if the customer got upset, big fucking deal. You get upset, fine. No refunds. You're upset. Big deal. Oh, you want to do something about it? Good. Give me the chance. You know, give me the chance to fight back. And that's the part that I think is ignorant because, you know, I feel like now I will, I think I could fight any man. And I know in reality that's, you know, I'm 5'2", out of the shoes. It's not, it's probably wouldn't work out very well, but it keeps me feeling, you know, maybe it's a false sense of security, but it's some sort of sense of security, and that's enough, usually.
No, 5'2"?
Well, the shoes, though. I mean, the shoes are very, very, like, they're dangerous. They're very dangerous. You know, the heels of those things. Like I said, I put the heel in the guy's throat because I knew if he moved, you know, if he tried to come at me with the heel in his throat, terrible things would happen to him. So, I don't know, maybe I feel like I wear weapons on my feet and that gives me...
It's fucking crazy that you do this and guys are alone with you. And even at the Arrow, there's people there, there's guys there, there's cameras, there's got to be some security.
There's the cashier who sits in the store up front. And, you know, you're never too far away from the other girl working. So should you scream or should something bad happen, she would probably hear before the cashier. But something, I mean, like, it wouldn't, I'm not worried about it. I feel very safe there. Most of our clientele have been there for years. And, you know, I mean, we do get new guys, but usually they find out about the place from regular customers. So usually the guys that come in, even new ones, sort of know the drill and they're better behaved than many guys that I've just dated on the outside, like for free.
Now you still date?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No steady?
No. No.
You tell them what you
currently
do.
Currently, no.
You tell them what you do?
Yeah.
They just look at you and go, oh, they go,
well, I mean, cool, it hasn't been easy.
No, it's not easy.
And there's some guys think that because that's my job, then automatically we're not going to be monogamous because automatically if I'm giving some dude a hand job for work, they can go out and fuck some girl they meet at a bar. And clearly it's the same thing. I don't feel that way. You know, And when I had a steady boyfriend, I did back off of what I did. I was a bit more chaste with it, you know. But I don't know.
Now you work a lot of hours.
Yeah.
You put in some fucking hours. You're a busy mm-hmm. girl.
Yep.
This place today, you're working 11 to 1 or something? Or 1 to
10 a.m. to 1 a.m.
Jesus Christ.
So I had a girl come in to cover the couple hours I'd be gone, and then I'd go back and stay there till 1 a.m.
And it's busy the whole day?
No. No, no, no. It's dead. I did one show today. I had one customer. We call them shows because that's what they technically are.
How many days a week over there?
It depends. Usually I do 4 or 5 shifts. This week I have, let's see, I worked yesterday, double today, so 1, 2, 3. I work Friday day and Sunday day, so I'll do 5 shifts this week. And it's we were closed for like 3 months because of licensing issues, so we just opened up, so not all of our regular customers know that we're open again. And
so it's been
dead. Yeah. I mean, it's always kind of dead, but it's been pretty dead the past couple of weeks. I'm still good. I've got all sorts of water.
Now you do comedy.
Mm-hmm.
How much comedy do you do? Do you go out a lot during the week? Do you get out?
You know, I worked the road pretty steadily until I moved out to LA 5 years ago. And, you know, I was featuring and can't really always afford to fly back to the Midwest or fly anywhere for feature money.
It's a fucking yeah. nightmare.
So I didn't realize that people didn't come to LA to work the road, that they came here to stay here and write shitty TV shows or good TV shows, you know, to write and to do movies. I thought that moving out here would help me on the road. I thought it would help me, you know, I read The Art of War and I thought that this was attacking the enemy from a different location. And, yeah. So I thought that I was coming out here to like really build up my career, and I came out here and it really fucking killed it. So
it's this is a different animal.
Yeah,
it's a different animal. You have to be prepared for it in a lot of ways. You have to be at the right place at the right time. You don't know what the fuck that is.
Yeah,
you never know what the fuck that is. You know.
That's why I got into sex work out here, because it was the only job I could find that would be flexible enough to allow me to travel. And when I first moved out here, I was traveling. The first couple of years, I was still on the road a bit. But, you know, that's why I got into it out here. It was the only thing I could find that would let me still do comedy. So that's worked out well. I run a couple shows in town. I mean, and I do get up fairly regularly, definitely, usually at least a couple times a week.
So you bang it out. You bang out the fucking comedy.
Yeah.
You bang out the work, you travel.
Yeah.
Because you were just gone for 10 days.
Yep. I did the Fringe Festival in Kansas City. It was my 10th year doing it.
Now, what's the Fringe Festival?
It's just, well, it's like the one in Edinburgh. These are all, like, all the domestic ones are just kind of offshoots of that one. So it's sort of a performing arts festival. The Kansas City one, I don't really know about a lot of the others. Kansas City has a visual arts component too and a film component as well. But it's primarily performance art. A lot of shows and a lot of performers that wouldn't get into other festivals, it's more accessible for them. And there's a lot more experimental performances. So I've done, in 10 years, let's see, I started doing it when I was when I was doing a lot of burlesque. And then when I moved out here in 2011, I would go back for it and I would do solo shows. And this one that I just did was my third solo show, and I got my first standing ovations in 20 years of doing comedy. First two standing ovations.
Good for you, man.
Yeah, I didn't know what was happening the first one, because I just go goodnight and I get off stage and I go backstage, and they just kept clapping, and I was back there and I'm like, well, they'll stop, and then they didn't. I was like, what the fuck are they doing? Why aren't they stopping? Stop clapping. And then my tech guy came back and he's like, you know, you're supposed to go back out there. And I'm like, why would I go back out there? The show's over. And he goes, well, they're standing up and they're clapping. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? It was something. Yeah. That was a real, like, changer.
Let me ask you this. Is there an end game? Is there one day you wake up and you go, I'm not going to that box anymore and dancing or whatever?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when I don't have to. When I don't need to have that job to pay my bills. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And now does the... is comedy still like that dream? Like when a guy like me comes in and wants to fucking freak you out and you're like, wait a second, I have a dream. I'll put up with this. I have a dream. So is that still your dream to do comedy? You still feel it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Comedy storytelling. Absolutely. Like those are the solo shows. I combine those two and I really like that format. You know, I like not performing with so many limitations with comedy. Like if you're just in a mainstream comedy club, they have expectations. You're going to get up there within 30 seconds. You're going to have a laugh, which I never have a problem with, FYI. But you know, you want a premise, setup, punchline, premise, setup, punchline. They don't want a lot of deviation. And, with storytelling shows, they don't really want stand up. But if I do my own show, if it's a solo show, I can do whatever I want to do. And
just go in and out.
Yeah.
You can just go in and out. Stand up, dance, jump up and down, tell a story.
Absolutely.
And start all over again. So it's pretty innovative. I like that idea. Yeah.
I work better when I don't have a lot of, like, when I don't have limitations, I work better. I work better without, like, a lot of things imposed, rules imposed on me. I was raised to not really respect authority. And so I think that's... I don't know. I think that's probably why I had problems with a few club owners.
Do you ever talk about your sex work on stage?
Because
I was thinking, like, it's amazing that more comics don't do that. Because, like, Joey, you had a life, like a crazy life before stand-up. Now, Julian, it's a life that not a lot of people can relate. Like, they can't even imagine. So it'll be pretty cool to talk about it.
I talk about the stripping, and if I'm doing the storytelling, then I feel like it's easier to talk about the sex work to get more into it. But I think with just stand up, it would take so much time to explain what I do that, you know, any jokes that come from it, it's too much setup. It's too much setup required to...
Well, for a comedy club, once you say fucking stripper, you lose the guys. That's it. They're looking at you from a different perspective now.
Yeah.
Like now the women are like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Well, so it's kind of weird. I can soften that because my jokes are really... the jokes about being a stripper are about how bad I was. When I was at a strip club, I mean, I was terrible. I was just horrible. I'd done burlesque and I didn't think there was... I thought that was stripping and it's so not. And I was just... I was at a topless joint right up on Lankershim, Star Garden. And this girl that hired me was someone I knew from burlesque. And so I just didn't realize there was like much of a difference. So I was up on stage wearing like fringed panties and I was trying to do like glove peels. And these guys were just sitting there like, what are you doing? Just show us your tits and don't smile, you know? And so I think that because I'm coming at it from not a perspective of like, I was a great stripper. I am a powerful stripper. I think but isn't that the truth with most comedy? Like the underdog always is appreciated. You know, nobody wants to hear you talk about how great you are. Everyone wants to hear about like what you've overcome. I mean, in a funny way, of course, everyone wants to hear about how the bad times, but we can laugh at them. You know, nobody wants to hear about how great your day went. Unless it went great for a really weird reason, you know. Nobody wants to hear about the day you checked off everything on your to-do list. You know, well, I went to the post office today. Everything went fine. I went to the grocery store. Everything was fine. Picked up the kids. They were a treat. Nobody, that's not funny, you know. If your to-do list includes, like, I ended up in Mexico trying to buy pills and everything went fine and everything went great, that's different. But nobody wants to hear about benign bullshit, I don't think.
Now, you do spots at the Improv and stuff. I know that, right?
One of my shows is at the Improv.
And you can, what's the show at the Improv?
It's called Be Funny. It's a stand-up spelling bee.
Okay.
I'm a really good speller. I'm a stripper that can spell really well.
And then where's the other show you do?
The other one is called Dirty Birdie Story Hour, and it's a storytelling show themed around deviance, not just sexual, but any kind of deviance. And that's at 3 clubs in Hollywood. Second
oh,
Monday.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm. Anytime you would... So grace my stage. You know.
Hit it from all fucking angles, don't you?
Yeah.
That's tremendous, man.
And I'm starting another show, actually, on my birthday, August 22nd. And it's a brand new concept. I don't think anyone has ever done it. It's not stand-up. It's not storytelling. It's something else.
What is it?
Conversations. It's called We Need to Talk. And it's a celebration of the lost art of conversation. Because I'm tired of not talking to people. I'm tired of just looking at my phone or texting people. I went on like a pre-date with a guy that I was really, really into. And we texted, and I'm really great at texting. I'm really great at it. I was witty. I was charming. Awesome. And then I went to hang out with him. And I mean, I was pretty high. But he was too. And we were sitting on opposite couches, and it just felt like a job interview. And I couldn't have like a natural conversation with this person. And I hate that. I want to be able to have conversations again. And I think that everyone should have conversations again. Get out of the phone, you know, just face out of the phone and talk to a person. So that's what I'm doing. It's a show comprised of 10 5-minute conversations with me. 7 booked, 3 audience members.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Try it. Man, at least you're working from, you know what you want to do. A lot of comics come out here, and you made some great points tonight with the conventional comedy. Like, when you go to a comedy club, they don't want to fuck around. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You could fuck around in the middle, but they want you to grab them. They want you to sell drinks. They want you to do 1,000 things. So it's the business side of it. Yesterday, I was sitting, and it's funny how I learned to become a comic at the Comedy Store, but I learned the comedy business at the Improv.
Mm-hmm.
It's so weird what I grab from both those clubs, you know?
Yeah.
And the Improv, they're great because they're open to ideas. You go up to the Improv and go, I want to do this show. And
they're
like, okay, we'll give it a shot for 3 weeks and we get people, talk about other things, you know? But, like, I'm done. Like, people come to me all the time and go, I have a new idea and I want you to do it. What is it? It's a stand-up show for TV. I don't think people want to watch that anymore. You have the show on fucking whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You have Comedy Central, and you have HBO, and you have Showtime. You know, what kind of show are you going to do? I was always looking for a show like what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe half storytelling, 10 minutes of comedy with a panel. I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
But it's 2017. It's time to mix it up a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
I don't have the balls. Like, I've always spoken the lead of traveling with the podcast. And I just don't have the balls, and I don't have the time. I don't have the time to travel with the podcast,
because you're busy traveling for comedy and doing comedy stuff.
Yeah, I'm doing comedy stuff. So, and I'm burnt out. I'm an old fucking man. It takes a lot out of you to fly. This last week I flew, and I don't feel too fucking good. I
got to go
to Denver tomorrow.
Well, I mean, please feel free to pass any gigs that you are too tired to do.
No. What I do is,
bedraggled stripper.
What I usually do is, listen, I know my situation.
Yeah.
So I book light.
Mm-hmm.
I know what I can do, and I know what I can't do.
Yeah.
You know, I know. I know already. So ask me, and I'll tell you. And I know what I can do, and I know what I can't do. You know, I have a family, so I got to be there between 4 and 7, 4 and 7:30. So I just have all these little restrictions on me now. Not to mention, when I go to the Comedy Store, I get home at 12:45.
Yeah.
That means I fall asleep at 2. That means I'm behind the fucking 8-ball. So that's the other thing that I'm thinking about lately, like just doing comedy on the road. And just staying in during the week and doing the fucking podcast. You know, it's so weird. Lee and I, before you came, were talking about the process. And part of the process is obstacles that get thrown at you, and you have to fucking go around them to continue your life, to make your life run smooth, you know? And who the fuck knew I was going to have a fucking baby at 50, you know? Who the fuck knew the podcast was going to make people come to comedy shows?
Yeah.
Who the fuck knew? I didn't know. But you talk, you do something, you stick to it. They feel your belief. And next thing you know, the wheels are in fucking motion. You know, Lee, when we started this podcast in that fucking office before the baby was born, did you think we'd have an office down here 5 years later?
Not.
And the process has been tremendous. What was the whole fucking process? We just stuck with it. We didn't do nothing that nobody else didn't fucking do.
And I think I just answered my own inner turmoil. I was just about to say, like, I didn't think about it. I was just having fun doing the podcast. I really never thought about 5 years down the road. And that's weird for me, because that's usually what I obsess about.
Yeah?
So, yeah.
I didn't think about like things like business things or where things were going when I was first doing comedy, and I really burned a lot of bridges that I was never able to rebuild.
So did I.
Yeah.
So did I. I didn't think I was going to get this far. I didn't think I was going to stick with it. So I didn't really give a fuck. I didn't really give a fuck. You know, I thought about it from a comedian's. At first, you know, we're all our noses open. Mm-hmm. And we want to take every gig. But then one day you talk to a friend of yours and he's like, don't do that fucking gig.
Yeah.
That guy's a thief or whatever. And then you start saying no. You start making little fucking moves, you know. I fucked over. I mean, I wouldn't send the tape. Mm-hmm. Like, I just refused to send the tape. I didn't send your fucking tape, all right? You, look, who's your feature this week? Susanna? Get her on the fucking hotel phone right now. We yeah. worked 2 weeks ago. What the fuck tape? You're not going to look at the fucking tape.
I've never it's gotten anything off a tape.
No, so that's why yeah. I never sent the tape. I refused. I refused. Mm-hmm. And you know what's funny? I got 3 jobs from blank tapes. Because they don't look at the tapes. It's just a control tactic.
Yeah.
And I've told young comics before, it's just, now it's completely different because now you're on YouTube.
Yeah.
Now they just go on YouTube and they fucking find you and you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so right there as they're talking to you. Right there as they're talking to you. Uh-huh. And what do? I'm a feature. Okay. They put an earbud on and they're talking to you. Yeah, okay. And they see if you're dirty or not and shit. Right there, they go, okay. Email me your avails in 3 weeks and I'll let you know what's going on. Whatever. But there were just things I thought were just power moves that I didn't fucking like and I didn't appreciate.
Yeah.
You know, you and I are the same animal in a lot of yeah. ways. I'm sitting here looking at you going, we're the same animal in a lot of ways. The only problem with me is I'm half a prude. Like, I'm a half a fucking prude.
That probably makes it even better. Just the fact that she could, like, make you blush.
Oh, no. She knows it. That I'm like I'm like a half a fucking prude. So I could have gone the other way. I just wouldn't know what service I could have offered. You know what I'm saying? I couldn't offer no fucking services to no women. I'm clunky and shit.
Are there guys that do that?
Fuck yeah.
For women?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. The American Gigolo is sure. Richard Gere, 81. Stop it. Going over to freaks' houses right over in Beverly Hills, getting $3,000 a pop,
like yeah.
silk shirts and shit, Lisa. Yeah. We'll make you one of those motherfuckers down there in Beverly Hills. Going down there and slinging dick down there. Some little, you gotta give them a back rub firstly. You know,
yeah.
My mind is, I just never imagined a girl would want that.
Well, like a lot of, you know, best case scenario, high-powered, rich women don't want the bullshit of dating. So they're like, okay, I need someone to go with me to this event. Let me find someone real pretty.
Yeah, that's badass.
And then he's going to fuck me afterwards because I'm going to pay him enough money. You know? And I don't want to say anything
about that. Go. What the fuck?
I think a lot of the gigolos are gay. Are gay men.
Why? Just so they don't have any like emotional feeling for it, or like
I don't know if that's the reason. I don't know if it's like I don't know. I mean, I know there's straight men that do it too, but I don't know if they get like overly excited, like a little dog just jumping up, like oh, I get to fuck you for money. Oh yay! You know, I don't know if it's that or if it's just I'm not really sure because I've never really it's not that's not my bag.
Yeah, you know? I was going to say that, like, I would like to pretend that wouldn't be me, but if anyone offered me that would be, I think I might just pass it.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't we put you on fucking the magazine show? That
Craigslist?
That Craigslist. Cute little Jew will come over your house and holocaust your pussy. Tremendous. With a picture of Hitler on it. Forget about it. You'll be getting 10 fucking calls an hour. Susanna Lee will be making 10% off you making fucking a Gino a day. That's it right there.
That's great.
Hey, listen,
I just found my out.
Listen, Ron Jeremy has never won a fucking Mr. America contest.
No.
And he made millions of dollars fucking women.
Yeah, but I don't have Ron Jeremy's dick.
Who knows? Maybe you got something, a different pizzazz. Maybe you got the ass of a star. Maybe women will love your legs. They'll say you got legs like Elvis. They love the hair on your legs and shit like that. You never know, Lee. You got to give it a shot.
There's a fetish category for whatever you are, whoever you are, whatever you have, there's someone that wants to watch it.
You show up dressed up. Well, who played? What's Sean Penn? What's that character he played in? You show up dressed like Kleinfeld, the fucking attorney Jew, and fucking what's that movie? Carlito's Way. Remember?
No, I didn't see that one.
See, this is why I can't talk to you no more. I can't talk to you. One of Sean Penn's greatest performances. You never fucking saw it. Because yeah, you just say you could come over dressed as a Hasid. You come over dressed as a judge. an attorney. You could be a thousand different fucking characters, Lee. Little rimmed glasses. I got ideas now. 10% goes to Uncle Joey. I can pimp you out down in Beverly Hills, Culver City and shit, Brentwood areas.
I'm down. Let's do it. That's crazy.
Now, the other job you had, behind the glass, I can't touch you there, correct?
There's lap dances there as well.
At the other place?
Yeah.
Where I went to there?
Mm-hmm, peep shows and lap dances. And so, technically, no, you can't touch. But, you know, lap dances are lap dances. And
right.
If you tip, you know, they're better lap dances.
I thought you just did the boot thing. That was it over there. That was always very interesting to me. I thought about you and I said, you know what, man? I got to talk to her why I have this fear of all this sex shit. Like, it just makes me go fuck. Like, I feel fucked up when I walk into those places.
Well, I mean, they're kind of fucked up places. Like, that place is dirty. Dirty place.
Yeah, but I've never gone to one of those places that ain't dirty. That's what gives it a certain pizzazz.
Exactly. That's the poetry of it. Listen, that's what I loved about it.
I went to a place one time that, I don't know if people have PTSD or people had trauma, but I got to tell you something. That night fucked me up for a couple of years because I saw some weird shit that night. In the early 80s, New York City was a fucking...
Oh, yeah.
You know, just the king of that shit. When I was in the fucking seventh grade, I had these two brothers, Juan and Alberto Ali. One was legit. The other one got hit in the head with a rock. In fact, one day, I hit him in the head with a fucking rock. I threw it up in the air, and he looked up and hit him right here. And he had a lump with a fucking cyst in the middle. But we used to hit each other with light bulbs from DuroTest, like the long ones and little ones, because they would always have dysfunctional fucking light bulbs, and they just throw them in the dumps. Anyway, to make a long story short, these kids were in the fucking eighth grade, Susanna. Maybe 13. Alberto was stupid. So he was maybe 15, but he was still in the eighth grade. They were in two different classes. They came from Cuba, so they didn't know how to speak English. So until you learned, they just kept you in the seventh grade. And then when you got to the seventh grade and be 16 or driving, they put you in a program called the pilot program. And you went into high school as a sophomore. So it was kind of weird. But anyway, to make a long story short, I remember being in the seventh and eighth grade with Alberto and Juan, and they would come to school on Monday and break down how they would take a bus to the Bronx and go to a place, and they'd take you to a place, and you pick the girl, and my heart would stop as they were telling me the stories. How the chick would wash your dick, and then she would fuck you, ask you what you wanted, and it was like cheap. I would sit there and go, what the fuck are you talking about? And I never thought about it in my perverted mind. And years later, I went out with these guys one night. The kid had a candy truck, and they took me over to this place called the 1040 Club. Mm. And it was $9.99 plus tax, $10.40. It's 1982,
$10.40. Oh.
And I don't remember if you paid when you were back there. I don't remember if you paid extra when you were back there. But they threw you into a lounge. All these guys with cologne on. They were looking to score all night. Like, those guys come in, like, at 1 in the morning. Now they can't score, so they want to get some pussy.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget asking, like, Pablo, you come Juan. It was Juan. I go, you come here a lot? And he's like, yeah, I come here all the time. It's great. The girls are great. They were from another country. They didn't fucking speak the language. They were scared to be there. And they were fucking Susanna in cubicles.
Yeah.
Like, there was no rooms, Jack.
Yeah.
It was office cubicles, and you would just go into the office cubicle, and there was just a wall. And she would take a bucket out from the under the bed and pour water on it, and then have a sponge, and she'd wash your dick. Let me explain something to you. I had never experienced anxiety until this woman started washing my dick with this fucking sponge. And then she asked me what I wanted to do. I couldn't even talk, Susanna. I was like, I couldn't even talk, so I just laid down. She got on top of me and she started bouncing and I couldn't stop. Like thinking of all the shit that was going to happen to me. Like I just couldn't stop. Like the bed kept going. It was one of those beds that you just opened up.
Uh-huh.
And there was a thin mattress in the middle and it had been used for years.
Oh, yeah.
And she's on top of me. I don't know what to do. So I couldn't come. I couldn't react. I just lay there in the middle. After 2 minutes, she just stops and she goes, you know, for an extra $10, you're going to eat my pussy. And I remember, like, I just threw her off me, and I just put my pants on and ran out of there. And that was it for me. That was it. Like, that was it for me.
Was it the impersonal nature of it? Or the fact that it was reduced to such a business endeavor?
Both.
Mm-hmm.
Both. Both. It was just fucking horrific. I couldn't believe guys were in there. Like, it just fucking killed me. And then, you know, I was a half a fag. I had regular girlfriends and shit. I didn't really know mm-hmm. nothing about nothing. And then when I got into comedy in 91, I got divorced, and I started doing comedy, and I started meeting people on the road. And I met this one girl that just took me for the ride of my life. Mm-hmm. I still talk to her. I still talk to her. She's crazy. She got two kids now. She married an Indian dude that was 80, and he died and left her $3 million. Oh, this chick had, oh, yeah. But she still strips mm-hmm. once a week in the town over. So I think she lives like in Sarasota. She strips uh-huh. in Tampa. Oh. And she's got a living boyfriend. He doesn't know what she's just a fucking animal. You know, she's yeah. just a real deal. You can't even contain that shit with the animalistic shit in her heart. But I got to tell you something. At that time, I had been to prison. I had done 1,000 things. She was telling me shit that I was like, my jaw would drop.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she was telling me stories of her going to college and some guy was paying her rent and fuck her once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
Sugar daddy.
Yeah, he'd just come over, fuck her, and leave. He didn't care what she did, nothing. If she had to take a trip somewhere, she would go with him, and he'd give an extra $3,000 fucking dollars. It was just, I didn't know about this world. I swear to God, I had no idea about this world, man. It was fucking crazy to me. So I ended up dating her for like 4 years, and it was just an experience going to pick her up at the strip club.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, and then driving home, I just felt fucking, and it was weird because a friend of mine always says that one day it got really funny. When her and I broke up, mm-hmm. everything in my life changed. Because it seemed like me being with her was holding me back, like something was fucking with me, and it was. It really mm-hmm. was fucking with me. You know, she was at a strip club. She was hustling. I knew what she was fucking doing. I'm not fucking retarded. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You can't bullshit the bullshit. I know what you're fucking doing. So it just, it's weird. Today I still talk to her because if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't have been in L.A. So I don't forget anybody. Oh. Yeah, that's the truth of the matter.
Mm-hmm.
She was the one that said, let's go to fucking L.A. Let's give it a shot, you know. So oh. I can't put it down for any reason. It was sure. her balls that got me here. So let me give some shout outs and I'll get you the fuck out of here. Where's my glasses? I'm going old. Don't forget Denver this weekend and next Friday, the Ice House. Dylan Bailey, Beloy, John Cutler, and Amy, Margaret Oliver, Crystal Oaks, Davin Cole Jr., Brett Rogers, Joey Rooklyn making it happen, Randy Hill, Joshua Mancuso, and Greg and Lynn up there in Seattle. I owe you a call, Greg. I didn't forget about you, cocksucker. And that's it. I got to go to Denver this weekend, man. I got to tell you something. That hairs, I think that's what fucking got me sick this week. Just the thought of going to Denver. The hairs on my necks have been sticking up. You know, I have a 26-year-old daughter.
No.
And she lives in, no, she doesn't live in Boulder.
Mm.
But my ex lives in Boulder. We haven't talked. We just don't talk.
Mm-hmm.
So every time I go work Denver, I just feel shitty for a few minutes when I go to Denver, you know? Yeah. I lived in Denver, in that area, for a long time. And it's a real beautiful city. And I always felt like I disrespected. I got arrested in, well, this is a fucking rocket ship. It's like the fucking Twilight Zone. You know, I always felt like I disrespected. Like, I got arrested there. I went to prison in fucking Boulder.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I got caught for kidnapping in Boulder and shit. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, it was a fun day. So, the crazy thing is that now I've always been ashamed of going back to Colorado. Like, I always been mm-hmm. the mountains are beautiful. I disrespected the mountains. You know, I thought this way for years. So for years, I was banned from this club in Denver. That's what made me leave Denver, getting banned from the Comedy Works.
Oh, yeah.
You follow me? So once mm-hmm. I got banned from the Comedy Works, I was like, what the fuck am I going to do in Boulder? Work McKelvey's? Mm-hmm. Wits End? When am I going to do that? Yeah. Die to death. Die. So I had my daughter, who was 5 at the time, and I just talked to the mom and said, I got to move to L.A., and then we kept the relationship cool for a few years, but then it just went sour when she was like 10 or 11. They went to England for 2 years. And just,
so the daughter doesn't talk to you?
No, we don't talk at all. I tried, you know, I made an effort, but what are you going to do? So Every time I go back there, just it's just a weird feeling that you get like your little neck hairs stick up and shit. It's fine. I go back there, I do my comedy, I get some green chili, I go for a walk in the high altitude, and I get to see this is the first club I ever got on stage at, June 18th, 1991. This is first fucking club that I ever got on stage on. So it's always great to. When I got banned from there, it was pretty. It's really weird. Lee and I, before you showed up, we're talking about the process of your life. And the things that happen, what happens to your mind, like you think you're dead. And you're really not ever dead till you're dead. You're not dead till they put you in the fucking casket. You're not dead till you're fucking dead, man. Yeah. Because I thought I was banned from the fucking Comedy Works. Like, people would say to me, hey, I want to bring Joey Diaz to features. She'd go, not in a million years. He's banned for life. And I bumped into her in Denver at the Oddball Tour. And she goes, are you mad at me? And I go, why would I be mad at you? Because of you, I did something with my life. You forced me to do something. You pushed a hand. I had to come out of here and leave and move to Seattle and start from scratch. So now I'm working for her again. After that, she called my agent. She goes, we had a talk. I want to book him at my fucking club. So everything, you know, this is where I started. So this is like kind of emotional when I go back there.
I get that.
Know? I got no ties. I got no warrants, nothing like that. You know, everything's cool. I just go back there and relax and do comedy and eat chili. I'm looking fucking forward to it, man. I really am. I'm looking forward to this weekend. It's one of those weekends. This is one of the best clubs in the country. Have you ever stepped foot in there?
No, I talked to her on the phone once in the 90s.
Yeah, the Comedy Works downtown. That's a...
Yeah.
It's been there a long time. It's been there for sure for 25 years, because that's when I stepped on the fucking stage, and it was probably there 15 years before that. So they have another one now. That's in a more suburbia. I would make
that's it. The Improv, right?
Or no, the
Comedy
Improv.
Comedy Works has two locations?
Comedy now? Works has two locations, and then the Improv. The Improv is a nice club. I worked that one first. Before I worked at Comedy Works, I worked the Improv. Yeah. Nice place.
I was going into Denver for a burlesque fest, and I saw Al Cannell in the airport, who was managing the Improv at the time, and I hadn't seen Al for years. Al, you know, quote unquote, managed me for like a few minutes, real few minutes. Yeah, he said it was a nice place, and such a great guy. Yeah. I think he's back in Missouri now.
Listen, man, I'm happy you came in here.
Thank you so much for having me.
I didn't think you'd... open up as much as you did. It was very interesting.
I'm an open book.
No, I know. Now, what's the name of the documentary you did with Felicia?
Felicia's documentary is called Perv. And the web series that I created was called Peepin' Comics. And, yeah, it should be very interesting.
Now, what's a pedophile? A pedophile is somebody who molests kids?
Someone who is attracted to children. Someone who sexually... attracted to children, you know, whether they act on it or not, you know, the urges are.
Well, before you said pedophile, and I try to put two and two together, if they're in there giving you a foot rub, they're not pedophiles.
No.
But maybe. Maybe they're pedophiles in training, working themselves backwards and shit.
It's a podophile, right? Podiatry is foot doctoring. So wouldn't.
Listen, man, let me tell you something. I love a woman's foot in a shoe. I really love a woman's foot in a shoe. When I see a woman's ugly foot and she's got it in the wrong fucking shoe, it pisses me the fuck off. You understand me?
Yeah.
When they got a long foot and they put them in the launch pad shoes and they have a twist around their ankle, don't do that. Makes your foot look fucking longer. Don't do that shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's different shoes. I love women's shoes. But I gotta tell you something. I would never suck a woman's toe.
Never? Not even if it's super, super clean?
Fuck no.
No?
Fuck no. No.
I wish I could do a replay, because when she was saying that, I switched to your camera because your eyes were just shut. You were just so sad.
Oh, yeah. Fuck no.
I don't know that I would suck a guy's toes.
Oh, no.
And I don't. I generally, unless somebody is really, really good, I do not go near man ass. Or if I'm in love. I'll put a finger in the ass. But men's asses, no.
No, they're disgusting.
I had too many bad experiences
with them. None of your finger fucking stinks for 2 fucking weeks and shit. Then you can't sneeze.
Nail brush.
Yeah, you gotta get the nail brush. No. I know what's in my ass. I wouldn't let you go in there. It's fucking disgusting.
It's because you're a gentleman. You're a gentleman and a scholar.
No, you have to bathe if you gotta go into those fucking places and shit. You can't go in there all fucking stink. You gotta go home and put some cologne on, whatever the fuck you got. I don't wear cologne, but personally, whatever the fuck it. It's just, I like you.
I like you.
I think that you're interesting as fuck. I think you're out the box.
Completely
different than the rest of the broads you talk to in L.A. They're all cut from the same cookie. They're all chasing the same nickel.
Yeah.
It's nice to know you're not chasing the same nickel. You know, we have a time right now in this country where we're about to get the Lilith Fair. You know, I mean, and I can't blame him. I mean, Trump's fucking retarded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they give you, I mean, he just talked his way out of this fucking thing. Whatever.
Absolutely.
And we have this Lilith Fair, you know, and you see all these women with women power and stuff. And I think real woman power is when I see a woman like you.
Thank you.
When I see a woman that is living life under her fucking terms. It scares the shit out of me. You know, now I got to add you to my life. I got to think about you 3 in the morning that she makes home tonight. That some guy trying to bite her fucking toe off. But you...
I'll always make it home. Don't worry.
You go to Starbucks and you see these women who think they're doing something. They went and watched that fucking stupid movie. You know, what's the movie when she went over to Saigon to eat the hummus? What's that movie with the chick from Saturday Night Live?
Words.
Yeah. Eat, Pray, Love?
No, the other one. No. That's the other one. This is the one that came...
Oh, I thought it was that one.
No, that's the one with
Julia Roberts.
Right, the one that came out with the chick from Saturday Night Live that she breaks up with the guy and she goes over to fucking Iran and she meets Turkish people and shit like that. You know... You see those women, and they're sitting there at a fucking Starbucks talking about their adventures in fucking Bangladesh and shit, and 3 other women, like, sitting there drooling from themselves. And then again, I see a woman like you who's banging it out, the real deal, banging it out, doing comedy, you know, listening to fucking perverts and shit, which at the end of the day, you don't listen to. When you do comedy as a woman, every fucking night you get abused. Every fucking night. Somebody says, nice tits, you got a nice ass, you know. You open up the fucking stripper gate on these fucking morons.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a fucking nightmare as a woman. Trust me, I was on the other side of that, so I know how creepy we get at times. Yeah. But, you know.
On the road, I've been treated worse by the men in the comedy industry than I've ever been treated by the guys that I've stripped for or done whatever for. You know? I had a club owner ask me to blow his landlord between shows on a Friday once. It was right after the only time I ever got fired from a club. And so when he asked me to come in the office, I was like, oh shit, I'm going to get fired again. Oh no. Cause I thought it was just a snowball thing. And I went and he goes, my landlord is at the show. And I was like, I'm really going to get fired. And he goes, and he liked you. And then I was like, I don't know what's happening now. And he goes, would you blow him? And he must've seen my face, like just fall or do something, because he goes, oh no, I would pay you. So
did you negotiate or you said no?
I was just like, no,
that's good that you keep him.
I was like 23 at the time.
Yeah,
I was like,
you keep him separated.
Well, this was before any of that. This was,
yeah, because once you get one blowjob on the road, you'll never stop.
They don't fucking hunt you down, you know?
Like a fucking barracuda, these motherfuckers. Lee, what do you got going on, cocklicker?
What do I got going on? I have a couple more podcasts this week, and
Paula comes back Sunday.
Sunday from Rome.
You're locking her up Sunday night. It's over and shit.
Yeah, she's in Rome with Henry. Actually, Henry's there.
Oh my god, Henry who?
Our buddy from Jiu-Jitsu.
Henry.
Yeah.
Who's Henry? Henry Houlihan.
Yeah. Okay. Henry. Yeah. Houlihan. Yeah.
Houlihan. Okay. Nice. Nice. All right.
And that's it. That's
I'm happy you
I'm trying to think of what else I have. No, that's it. Yeah.
That's all you got. Don't worry about it. I got to go to Denver. I'll be back Sunday. Next week, we're on Monday and Wednesday next week. I want to thank Susanna Lee, right?
Yes, thank you.
For coming on the show tonight. I also want to thank our sponsors. Number one, as usual, on it. I love you motherfuckers. I've been doing the mixed greens lately, and it's tremendous. I've been taking the shroom tech again. It's tremendous. I've been back on the hemp force protein again. You know, I got a box every like 3 months. I bother them and I get reacquainted with the products and shit like that. And I got to tell you, it's better than fucking ever. The shroom tech, I got my blue belt. Something must have happened. So you have that there. Number two, speaking about blue belts, gis, rash guards, bags, gi bags, they have one of the best. But you know how I always talk about preparation?
Absolutely.
Nobody like Datsusara put together a bag for jiu-jitsu that's more prepared. I got knee pads in there. I got knee pads for the knee pads. I got an extra belt. I got an extra rash guard in there. I got a water bottle, and I got a backup water bottle canteen, so the water stays at the fucking temperature you put it in on. You understand me? There ain't no fucking dicking around when I finish class. Now the water's warm. I got four packages. I got an extra zipper down there that I can hide my little protein powders down there. They even give you a little bag to put your rash guard in, so the wet rash guard doesn't touch your fucking gi. This is the technology of Datsusara, okay? And all the products are made with hemp, whether it's their tremendous gis, whether it's their tremendous rash guards, or the famous fanny pack, as we call it. I got mine ready for tomorrow. Vapor pen, papers, aspirin for the heart, you know, the whole fucking deal, you understand me? Some gummy bears. I got everything ready to go to Denver. So that's what I'm talking about. Fanny pack, rash guards, the gi, the hem gi is superb. I dropped 20 pounds. I'm in that motherfucker doing sidekicks into flying arm bars. You understand me? But do me a favor. Go to
dsgear.com
and go to the page. Take a look at the colors they have. Take a look at the supplies they have, whether it's the bag that you're looking for or a new gi or a new rash guard. Take a look at the fine selection. And then, what do you do, Lee?
You use code Joey and you're going to get 5%
off. 5%
off
delivered to your house, dsgear.com. Right or wrong?
Absolutely right.
Okay. I got to give you a rash guard, Lee. You look nice in a fucking rash guard, cocksucker. A little hemp rash guard for you. All jokes aside, if you're looking for a great travel bag, jiu-jitsu bag, Datsusara. Look at that one I have. It's fucking phenomenal. I'll take a picture next time I go to jiu-jitsu. I love you, cocksuckers. Thank you for coming on. My little princess, thank you for coming on. I want to thank Onnit. I want to thank Datsusara. And I want to thank all you motherfuckers for listening and giving me your time. Have a great weekend. Be safe, and we'll be back Monday. Stay black.
This show was brought to you by Datsusara. Go to dsgear.com right now and check out their extremely high-quality functional gear made with hemp textiles. They have bags, gis, t-shirts, rash guards, and much, much more. Go to dsgear.com right now and enter promo code Joey, J-O-E-Y, to get 5% off. Show is also brought to you by Onnit.com. Go to Onnit.com and use code word CHURCH to save 10% on all their amazing optimization products like Alpha Brain, Numu, ChumTech Immune, and ChumTech Sport.